Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
God, I love Joan Cusack. She was on Saturday Night Live?
Wait, what?
She was a cast member on the comedy sketch show SNL from 85 to 86.
How did I not know this?
Now, I'm a journalist, Babs. Move over, girly. Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast where we ask, whose fault is it that you're gay? But in today's episode, whose fault is it that you're bi? That's right, we're going bi with Babs Gray, an incredible guest, and I can't wait to get to this episode. But I do want to give a quick thank you to everyone who listened last week. I was like gooped and gagged every single day seeing how many people were tuning in. And obviously, Ben and Ronnie from Watch What Crappens were unbelievable guests. And I want to thank them for coming on. I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for enjoying. And a really big shout out to anyone that joined that Patreon the last week. That was so good to see because, you know, the U-Girl needs money, but also just to form this community and help it grow. It is so fucking exciting. I do want to say that Ben and Ronnie, my gay aunties, did guide me towards a Whoopi film I have never seen before called Soap Dish. And yeah, I did watch it. And yeah, they were right. She holds up. Whoopi was, of course, incredible. But also, like, Terry Hatcher is in it. Kathy Moriarty, Kevin Klein, Sally Field is so good. It is just one of those movies that I cannot believe I had never even heard of it. And yes, I will confirm the ending. Pure garbage, very problematic, but I'm still glad I watched it, and I think that you should too. I'm not going to spoil the movie's ending because I know it's like 100 years old, but I'm just curious to see what you think of the movie coupled with that ending. So please let me know if you watch. I also want to say a lot of people enjoyed the ice cream segment of last week's episode. If you haven't yet listened to it, please do. The first 15 minutes, it's just like a full love letter to Ben and Jerry's. And I want to give a shout out because it turns out that a lot of people don't know about the show yet. There was like a great British baking style show, but for ice cream on the Food Network. It's called Clash of the Cones. If you're not watching, it is just like after a long day, it is such food for the soul. Unfortunately, it also is just an hour-long Ben & Jerry's commercial, essentially, because it is filmed at the actual Ben & Jerry's like headquarters in Vermont. And every time I watch it, I'm like gaping wide for a pint of Ben & Jerry's. So it comes with, you know, a bit of a risk there. But listen, get your ice cream. I'm right now in a very big mood to get topped. As you know, if you haven't had Topped by Ben & Jerry's, very big recommendation for that. But sit back, relax, and enjoy that Clash of the Cones on the Food Network. God, it's so good. I did announce on the old Instagram that I booked one of my favorite RuPaul's Drag Race queens for an episode on the pod. It's going to be a few weeks away, but I'm going to be giving an exclusive sneak peek into who it is and maybe even release the episode early for the Patreon subscribers. So go to patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And if you're already subscribed, thank you so much. It really makes this podcast happen. I do want to tell you about Babs Gray. She is a pioneer in the podcast world. She's a comedy legend. And if you don't know why she's such a pioneer, she's like one of the people that literally started the Free Britney movement. Her Instagram that she started is Britney's Gram. She has a podcast all about it. And in fact, her podcast called Toxic is like a very deep dive into the conservatorship of it all. And it's like seriously listening to a true crime documentary. It is so well done. I listened to it and I can't recommend it enough. So of course I've linked it in the show notes below. Also in the show notes is that Patreon. If you want to subscribe and get an inside scoop on which RuPaul's Drag Race queen we'll be having in the next few weeks, along with some awesome bonus features, including video stuff. And follow us on Instagram at gayasspodcast. And gosh, leave us a 5-star review if you like last week's Crappens episode, if you like this one. It's how we continue to grow this gay-ass community and spread that gay gospel, mama. This is Babs Gray. Enjoy. Also, kind of a crazy, like, very weird reunion because you did a part in my short film with the one and only Esther Steinberg, God in Thwarts. And it's been, do we know how many years ago that was?
I guess we filmed it, I don't know, 3 years ago?
I think three years minimum. And isn't it crazy that I got a full wide theatrical release, the red carpet we had? What was it?
Oh, my God. Oscars. It got an Emmy, Grammy. What is that called when you get all of them? EGOT?
We EGOT it, which is the first 9-minute short film to actually be nominated for an Emmy. And I just wasn't expecting the buzz to really come through, but it did. And I just, now we're on the other side of it all.
Yeah, I know. It's been a whirlwind. I can't believe I haven't seen you since those after parties.
Well, you know what happens when people become a big deal. We form our own sort of communities, tribes. And here I am just in my... Can we call this a mansion? I guess we will.
With your whiskey, what's this whiskey background?
Drag me. It's a, you know what it is? It's a whiskey mirror that we got at a flea market in New Jersey, of all places. And here's actually what happened is that Matt and I walked by this big whiskey mirror. That's like, you know, you find it like a pool hall or something. And we were like, oh my God, it's gorgeous. You know, that would run for $400 minimum at a New York City market. So we literally say to each other, we were like, okay, we're going to play hardball. We're going to go up and say, hey, can we have this for $100? And then if they say anything more, we're not going to do it for any more than 150. And I go up and I was like, so how much is this? And they were like, 40. I was like, oh, okay, we'll have that. Yeah, that's good. Thank you. did not negotiate a dime.
No, of course. I always do that. Yeah, my house is full of, I found a lot of things on the street that are in my house. But
that's the thing, though. It's like sometimes a street find can even hold more sentimental value than something you've had for a while.
I mean, of course. You know, sorry, I have a cough drop in my mouth in case I sound weird.
Listen, I'm zhuzhing your energy, and I'm such a fan. And speaking of being a fan, I was actually catching up on your new podcast, Toxic, and it's so fucking good. If anybody listening to this has not listened yet, it's in my full intro you've heard about Babs Gray, but like your journalism of the Britney Spears conservatorship and everything, I cannot imagine the work that goes into that fucking podcast, into Britney's gram, into everything that you do. I mean, it obviously, anybody that works on podcasts or even listens know the podcasts are a lot of work, but what you are doing on Toxic is so incredibly smart because you get to the human nature of what Britney is going through, and also just like the stakes of it all. I mean, has it been rewarding to work on that podcast with all the work that goes into it? Do you feel like an accomplishment, or is it really like sucking the life out of you?
I'd say it's a healthy mix of both.
Sure.
It's been by far the most I've ever worked on anything in my entire life. It has been, and thank you for that, because I think sometimes, you know, with content, anything people make, they don't sometimes realize how much work goes into it. Mm-hmm. So it's really like nice when I hear people acknowledge that, because yeah, it's just been hours and hours and hours of investigating, researching. And then I've never written something like this before. So, you know, you have to write it so that everyone understands it. So there's so many rewrites that go into it. And then it's like, you could spend an hour on one sentence just making sure it comes out the right way, because it's so confusing to explain. So yeah, just a lot of intense work. And it's been really rewarding to see the feedback. And like, I think that we did what we set out to accomplish, which is really nice. But it's also, I mean, I'm so tired.
Yeah. Well, I'm so tired. Think that what is so shocking to me is because, of course, we read the headlines about what she's going through and like when you hear her statement for the first time. But what really struck me was the first part of it was talking about the medication they put her on, where she was on lithium and like she said that she was on a dosage that was fully irresponsible and it made her feel crazy. I mean, I'm going through my own medication journey right now, which of course is nothing compared to what she's going through, but because I have, you know, agency over what I'm taking. But I just think like it sounds so fucked up to not only have control over what you're putting into your body and then to feel, because I'm still struggling just figuring out what dosage of Lexapro to take. I'm not taking, you know, it's like, what do you yourself have a connection to that part of her story?
Yeah, I mean, I take antidepressants and stuff like that, but yeah, it's like it's just so far removed from, I mean, just everything about her situation, like the agency you're talking about. Just I can't imagine not being able to like make a simple purchase without having to get it approved by your father when you're almost 40 years old, it's really disgusting.
Yeah, fuck that guy. It's so dark. I mean, what? So I know the update essentially now is that Britney has appointed her own lawyer, that her father did submit papers saying that he is willing to step down when the time is right. So what, from your perspective, do you, where does the case stand right now?
It seems like it's kind of like a everyone's trying to save their own ass situation right now, where because there's a conservator of the person who is around right now, who her name's Jody, her and Jamie keep pointing fingers at each other and saying like, you put her into the facility. No, you did. No, this is your fault. And I think that everyone's just basically trying to like not get sued or, you know, so to me, what's happening is Jamie's trying to cover his tracks as much as humanly possible before they eject him.
Well, it kind of seems like they know that the anger of the world is now being pointed at them. And do you think that there is a chance that they will be either charged with something or potentially indicted?
I think that there's definitely a chance that could happen. I mean, I know that her new lawyer is trying to bring someone in to really look into the finances more. And, you know, depending on if they find anything there, there could be some charges. So I don't know. I mean, I'm sure she could sue them for many things that I can't like say exactly, but
yeah, I just hope that obviously that she's able just to have the freedom that, 'cause I think that we all grew up, especially in our age range, of just like being obsessed with her and like, and just wanting her to just succeed, and then to see what type of, I'm curious to see like in 20 years from now, when we look back on this, like what will be the perspective of not only Britney's journey, but like the people that put her into this situation. Like, I'm sure they're going to be villainized, because how could they not?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're looking back at it now from 13 years and how everyone kind of treated her back then in the press and everything. And now that reckoning we're having now. So, yeah, I just hope she can get her autonomy back and just do whatever she wants. You know, I don't know if that means music or not, but it's like, I just can't imagine what that would do to you to just be controlled and to be told you're crazy all the time, to be treated like that. It's really...
And also when you're forced to perform in that way, I think on top of feeling so not in control of yourself, and then to be like doing a Las Vegas residency and then on a world tour and then back to the residency. And like, I have had nothing close to her experience, but I even remember like I was on tour doing a musical, and the short version of the story is that I was on a crazy run of like, you know, 15 cities in 2 or 3 weeks,
what
whatever
musical?
It was. It was Elf the Musical. I played Buddy the Elf.
Oh, cool.
A gay Jew Buddy the Elf. But what happened is that I was staying in a hotel just for one night, because we were on like a bus from one city driving all the way to Texas. What ended up happening is I went to the bathroom, turned the light off, and on my way to my bed in this random hotel room, I tripped on a suitcase and then hit my head on the wall, like bam.
Oh my God.
Like, and so also I'm a very neurotic Jew, so I immediately go to the bathroom, turn the lights on, prepare to see blood gushing down my face. I had nothing of the sort, but I took 3 Advil, I went to bed, and then I ended up the next morning just being like, God, I'm such an idiot. I have a bit of a headache, but I'm fine. We drive 7 hours to the next city. I believe it was Fort Worth in Texas, and it just so happened that the executive producer of the entire company was going. The creative team was flying in from New York to see it. And I was 24 years old. It was my first big thing I'd ever done. And I thought I maybe had a concussion, because I started to kind of just feel a little faint. Because I just want to get to the end of the story, is that I kept thinking I was maybe concussed or something. I was having a full panic attack. I did not know at the time, but like felt weak. I felt tingly. My vision was feeling weird. And the executive producer of the show heard that I was having these problems. So he came back to the dressing room and he was like, so tell me, are you going to do the show or not? Because if you're not, we got to figure something out with the understudy. And the understudy, they had barely rehearsed, because it was early in the run. And I was just like freaking the fuck out. But I remember it's like the Katy Perry thing where she's like crying because she finds out that she's, you know, getting divorced. And then she has like the torch in her hand and she's going up for her concert. And I will say, I've probably told this story on this podcast before, but it was such a formative moment for me, because I was like, like, I just put on a smile and told myself I had to do this show, and I did it, and it went super well. I was like so proud of myself. And then the next show, the show goes out every year after year after year, and the next year they told me they weren't going to cast me again, even though I did such a great job and never called out, because the producer saw me have an anxiety attack and he didn't want that to happen again.
Oh my God, what a dick.
And I don't feel bad talking about it now, because it was such a fucked up situation where I gave so much to that show. And here's the thing, I want to be very clear that I don't think that person works with the company anymore. And I ended up doing the show again, and they did cast me again years later. And it was like incredible to go back to it and have a different understanding of like my worth and what I have to give. And like, right. It was a really, really great experience that came full circle. But of course, as a 24-year-old, to be like, you know, almost blamed for just the pressure that you're going through. And I think that, again, nothing compared to Miss Brittany, but I do understand 1% of that. And if she's having that a hundredfold, holy shit. I just can't even imagine.
Yeah. And she's been told, you know, she was told it was going to end like about a year in. And so I could see, you know, you can just see it all happening. Like they say like, oh, you know what, just agree to this. And, you know, we'll get you out in a year, whatever. And then they just keep holding that carrot in front of her forever. And she, in the meantime, she's behind the scenes trying to get out. And yeah. And like you said, they just kind of hold her own mental health against her, whatever. It's this really horrible catch-22, especially conservatorships, where it's like, if you do badly, it's proof that you should be in one, but if you do well, then it's like, wait, now I can't remember what I'm saying. There's some catch-22, now I can't remember how to say it. But
no, it's
yeah,
basically
it's just,
like, if you are doing poorly, they put you in a conservatorship, but then you have to prove that you're still doing poorly. So then when you're doing well, they don't believe you, and then they just keep you in the whole cycle, and there's no way out.
Oh, yeah, that's what it was. If you're doing well, then that's proof that it's working. That's what it was. So it's like, right. If you're doing poorly, they can keep you in it. If you're doing well, then it's like, well, see, it's, we're doing good. So it's
see,
just
she was
really
meant to be in this forever until the end of time. It's like, no, yeah. Babe, no, maybe this just wasn't the right move, and she needed like to not be on the fucking lithium you gave her. Yeah. I think mental health, I can tell that there's a trend towards more willingness to openly discuss things. And like, I mean, I feel like with the Olympics this year, there was, you know, so much more talk of like Simone Biles advocating for herself because of her mental health, and she had to pull out of certain events because of that. And it's just because if you can't see it physically on a body, it's so real. And like I was on Zoloft for, I think it was like 3 or 4 months, and it just kept not working, kept raising the dosage. And now changing to be on Lexapro, I'm realizing for the first time that I actually do think it's working. But the devastating part of this, Babs, is that a friend told me that she's going through the same thing. And I think that I'm realizing that I'm always going to be crazy and have just like a baseline cuckoo cachoo-ness, and this is just going to make it a little more manageable. But I was like, but I want the cuckoo cachoo-ness out the station. I want her to go goodbye. But it's like, no, the train's always there. It's just now the metaphor, I have no idea where it's going, but it's like, but how big is the train? I don't know where it's going. We're like, how far are we going on the tracks? Whatever
now,
it is.
Yeah, the engineer is there. The conductor's hat is staying
but
on.
But the snack tray does not have the Oreos. Okay, now I'm confused.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that's like a good place to come to, though. You know, I think it's hard, but it's good to just realize like, yeah, this is who I am. And like, it's, you know, this is going to help me manage it.
Yeah. And I honestly, like, to make it very in the present, I think before I was taking these medicines, I probably would have been about to log onto this call with you and been really nervous because I really respect you and I want this podcast to be good and boo, 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 boo. And I've realized recently, like, my terror of the world ending because of my nerves, that part of it, actually, I can feel it going away. And that's, I'm like, oh, fuck, it is working. But yet yes. I'm still having X, Y, and Z thoughts. Like, it's, oh, those thoughts do stay, but these feelings don't. And I'm like, parsing out what is going to be a part of me and what can actually be aided by the pills. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that is what's good, what's nice about your saying, like, getting into your 30s is that that really is where you're able to be like, okay, like, this is who I am. This is how to deal with my bullshit.
Yeah.
And you're just able to let things go a lot easier. I'm able to be a lot nicer to myself than I was in the past.
Totally. It's all a journey. I mean, speaking of journeys, though, I do want to ask you the famous podcast question, which is, Babs Gray, whose fault is it that you're bi? We're going on the B team today. What do we blame? Or who? Or where?
I blame AOL. I blame America Online.
Oh my God, Babs. I knew you would deliver, and you truly... Wait, let's delve in. What about it?
So I grew up in Salt Lake City. I wasn't Mormon, but, you know, obviously a very religious place to grow up in, very conservative. Kids did not, like, have sex. There was zero, like, sexual action happening anywhere. Everyone was very good, you know, good, quote, kids. So my only, like, real outlet for sexuality was like the internet, and so we had that little dial-up internet, and I would log on and I would like cyber or whatever, or I would look at porn. I remember I would download photos and print them out, and I hid them in like a little pouch.
Wait, what kind of photos were they, do you remember?
Well, I guess like, yeah, I would just look at both. I think I first did look at lesbian porn mostly because I think I was like uncertain. I was especially uncertain of like men's bodies at that point. And I was like, I don't know if I want to see a dick, you know? So yeah, I would download the, yeah, pictures of women together.
I mean, I truly, my mind is racing because there are so many parts of AOL that definitely queered the shit out of me. Like, for example, the first thing that comes to mind, I don't think I've really ever told anyone this, is that there was a guy that went to my high school, but it was like early high school, so middle school to high school, and I of course had a crush on him, and I'm pretty sure he was very confirmed straight, but we would IM on AOL, and we started to talk about masturbating. Like, I think that in his mind, he was just like, I'm a dude talking to a dude, and like, you know, I've never talked to someone about this stuff, and like, whatever. And in my mind, I'm like, and this guy wants to jerk off with me someday. And I just, like, hearing him even mention it, like, turned me on so much. And like, and I know that a lot of parts of AOL is like, it's not all about like the sex and the sexting, but it did definitely contribute to giving me places to realize what was turning me on. And like, I would sometimes not even go to the pool with my family over the summer. We go to like whatever Jewish community center pool, and I'm like, I'm gonna stick around here, and I would stay on AOL and just look up gay shit. And I would go to this is very devastating that I would go to a Yahoo pool. You could play pool on Yahoo. Yeah, sure. And there was a room that was labeled Moby Dick, and that was a euphemism for all gay men sexting in a Yahoo pool game room.
Oh my God, I love it.
I'm like, there's some sort of euphemism with like the cue and the balls and the pockets and all. But like, I'm sure I was all of 15 years old playing Yahoo pool with a 45-year-old bear in Wisconsin. I'm sure of it.
1,000%. So were you guys all sexting in the actual chat, like the public chat, or was it like private chats off from?
Wait, that's a good question. I think what it was is you would be in a public chat and there would be some general chatting, but then if you felt like you were like vibing with one person, then you would go private.
You'd go off to the,
and
yeah.
I'm just, another thing is popping into my mind that I would then do a website called menchats.com, I think, and that was just a full-on gay sex chat room. Like, that wasn't we're not playing any Yahoo pool here. And the thing is, it's funny about this conversation is that on the Chris Burns episode, the Fat Carrie Bradshaw episode, we talked about a website that we both went to called jackandworld.com, and once I put that video up online, it really a lot of people messaged in about that they also went to that. And I went to nifty.org, which was about erotica, writing.
I went to Nifty. That was also erotic stories I would read, yeah.
See, the internet, I mean, I feel bad for... I feel bad for people before the internet, but it's like, what do they do?
I do think definitely, like, I always knew I was bisexual from a young age, but I didn't really, like, come out or date a woman until later, but... But I think like it did help me access what I was into.
So I'm curious about that. Like, you grow up in Utah, but you were not, were you a different religion than Mormonism?
I was Catholic, like ish, you know. My parents were, but it wasn't super intense.
Interesting. So then do you have A to B to C? Do you watch The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
I do. Okay. That's the only one I've ever watched.
So wait, do you have an opinion about, like, as a first, like, Housewives intro, like, what do you feel? How do you like it?
I mean, I love it. I love Heather. She's my favorite. She posted a free Britney thing and I was like, oh my God, I started this.
Okay.
You should.
Heather Gay is a true ally, and she and I actually sometimes interact on Instagram, and I'm going to have her on this podcast. I'm going to call it That's a Heather Gay-ass podcast episode, and it's gonna happen. But continue. We like Heather. Go on.
Yes. I love Heather. I mean, it's fun. You know, I really, like, over the pandemic, really allowed myself to get into reality TV, where I kind of, like, didn't watch it that much before.
Yeah.
And now it's so soothing. Like, it really soothes me in a way that other things just don't.
I agree. I think that sometimes people used to give a lot of shit to anyone that enjoys reality TV because it's like they thought it was a lesser than thing. But a lot of people now acknowledge that, like, the editors of these shows deserve the highest awards. I mean, yes, the personalities are great. We love our Heather Gays. Our Jen Shaws are what give us the plot. And, you know, to be determined on her front. But, like, I think that the editors spin it into full-on magic. Like, there's so much comedy that there's, like, the wink to the audience. And I just unabashedly love Bravo. And I think that Salt Lake City had such an amazing first season. It was on way too late for me. It was on, like, at, I think, what, 10 p.m. last year?
Oh, yeah. I think I watched it, like, on Amazon after it was over or something.
Well, the problem is that Matt wanted to watch it live, and so I'd watch the first 30 minutes then go to sleep. So I was always like, oh, I love this part, and then anything that happened after the 25 minute mark, I was like, oh, that sounds fun. But I can't wait for the second season. Do we think Jen Shaw is fucked?
I mean, she's in the promotional photos that Heather's posting, so she's obviously in it. I mean, I don't know. I'm assuming did she get actually arrested? She did, right?
Charged? She's definitely, like, going to be going into her court proceedings soon. I think that apparently while they were filming is when she, like, all this went down. And so I think that it's going to be...
What a godsend for the producers. Like,
oh, I said when this happened, I tweeted, like, Andy Cohen's eating tonight. Like, they're... all of the legal stuff, like, unfortunately for these women, it creates such great plot lines. Like, let's talk about it. Obviously, I know Salt Lake City is your intro into Housewives, but, like, Teresa Giudice on New Jersey, it was so fucking insane because the plot for, what, two or three seasons was that she went to jail first for, like, what, 11 or 12 months. Then her husband went to jail after that. And then he was deported from the country and now lives in Italy. And that's, like, where, and or apparently something like go to the Bahamas, whatever. So that was a crazy part of New Jersey. And then on Beverly Hills this season, of course, Erica Jane is going through, like, one of the biggest fucking things in, like, lawyer history, which is that her very famous lawyer husband is being indicted for stealing money from orphans and orphans and widows. And so it's like there was, like, orphans and widows. And so it's like all of this stuff is so deeply devastating to the victims, to everyone involved, but it makes some good trash TV, girl.
Some good TV, baby. Yeah, especially with just, like, the Britney stuff has been so, like I said, so labor intensive that, like, when I'm done at the end of the night, I'm like, it's like a bubble bath. Like, I'm like, I just need to watch like, I watch Below Deck, or I watch Love Island, perhaps. Or something.
Listen,
like that.
Listen, this season of Below Deck, I'm really, really into, because there's the personalities are crazy. There's the guests are delivering.
I'm always, like, behind because I don't watch it live, so I never know if I'm watching, like, the current one or not. But.
Well, that's the thing, is that anyone listening to this now, like, the current Below Deck season is really good. They've done Below Deck Sailing, and I think I usually don't like it as much because I'm partial to a I don't know. I wish I knew the length of the boat. I'm partial to a
360 footer, whatever.
Partial to a 60-yard footer.
Yeah, they're it's you want a big boy. You want a big boy.
I want a big boy. It's like, it may not be the size of the boat, but if I just pretend that, like, I could finish it as a really good joke, but if
just insert it later.
Yeah. Eric, make a note in the editing to actually write a funny joke for this part. I do also want to, just speaking of things that we love so much, in your one of your comedy specials, I believe this was for Comedy Central, you said that you are worried that if you get into an accident and they're going through your phone and they're seeing the names on your contacts, like, I shudder to think of what the names are on my contacts. And I mean, is that a real thing that you have, like, pretty devastating?
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I was looking at the list of people I've had sex with, and that's where it came from. But
Oh, wow.
But then also, it was, you know, yeah, if you look in my phone, it's like just random. I think there's a woman named Spider in there. there's just lots of random people. Yeah, I'm in a relationship now, but old hookups that are just there under, like, whatever, Tinder,
yeah.
Greg.
You know what? I'm actually looking through mine right now, and I have one that was, like, we'll say his name is Greg, and then catering manager, because there was this event I worked, and I spotted he was, like, the head of the event, and I was, like, eye fucking the shit out of him, and I think I was, like, having a really weird, bold night, because this is not my MO, but I was, like, you know what? I feel his eyes, and I'm wearing this full black outfit, and why not? And so I went up to him and I was like, can I have your number or something? And he gave me his card and I put it in, and of course I texted him and he did not respond. But
yeah, I think I had one called Big Teeth Canadian because I couldn't remember his name. So I think in the joke I say Matt Canadian Foreskin, which I don't think was an actual, maybe was an actual thing. But
I'm actually devastated to tell you that one contact just said, oh, never mind. I have a contact for a person that just says fucking, but I realize that is because if you want to type in fucking on your text messages, if you have a contact named fucking, it won't autocorrect it to ducking.
Oh, smart. Look at this.
Little hack.
Yeah, I have in my contacts, one of them's last name is asshole in all caps. And now when I type it in my phone, it types asshole in all caps.
Wait, why is this person's name asshole? What happened?
Oh, God. Just a very shitty dude I dated a few years ago.
I mean, bad exes are just... don't know if I'll regret saying this, but I have an ex that, like, I really have zero resentment towards now, but I have been broken up with this person for 9 years, and I have only run into that person one time basically in those 9 years, and it was like 8 years ago. Like, I have not seen, and we live in the same city, and I haven't seen him in 8 years. It's like, I think the universe is on purpose. You know what it is? The universe is on purpose keeping us apart, and then because I'm leaving New York in 2 months, the week before I leave, we're gonna be like,
yes,
seated next at a restaurant together or something like that.
Do you live in fear of seeing him?
I mean, I want to see him. I feel like I've never had the experience of, like, being deeply in love with someone and then 8 years go by and being able to talk to them again. That's just, I'm a glutton for punishment, but I think it would be really interesting to see how it would go. And do I want to tell him how well I'm doing? Sure.
Of course. Gotta show off. Yeah, I think it's, to me, those kind of relationships are like a past lifetime almost. I mean, this guy I have no fucking interest in speaking to because, you know, but there are plenty of people I've been with who I would love to see, you know.
I don't understand the types of people that, like, are still good friends with their exes, but I really have respect for them because I don't think I've ever really been able to do that.
No, I've tried, but it doesn't work. This is so dumb, but I'm just been watching Love Island, and they're always like, can we be friends afterwards? It's like, no one's friends. Friends, it's like, I guess maybe if you're on that island, you have to be around each other 24 hours a day. You have to make yourself be friends, but.
Well, that's so interesting to me because I was hanging out with friends this weekend, and we were talking about the people we know that have sex within their friend groups, and they, like, are all having sex with each other and then still being friends and then going to share a house and having sex, but then also, like, doing a dinner party. Right. And it's like, a part of me has like a jealousy of, like, wow, I must be just fucking a lot. But then I know deep down, I don't think I could ever do that. And, like, of course I am talking about a lot of gay men. Like, I feel like it's very, sex within the gay world can be very different, but I don't know if I'm capable of fucking my friends and still being friends.
I just, yeah, I don't see it not getting messy in some way.
Well, listen, there's so many amazing things that you have going. I mean, like your comedy album, the Lady to Lady podcast, the Britney's Graham Toxic. I mean, as you're working in all these things, like what do you envision coming out of all the journalism coupled with comedy? Like, is there like a dream scenario of like a type of position or project you'd want to work on?
I mean, honestly, you know, it's funny because I'm at a weird place right now where I think for it's one of those things, or like from the outside, it probably looks like I'm crushing it and blah, blah, blah. But like, I don't honestly feel like that. Mm. I want to be making comedy. You know, I really loved working on this project, and I actually did love learning how to become a journalist, and I could see myself doing other projects involving that in the future. But I also want to be a comedy TV writer. Like, that's really my end goal. I want to make comedy TV, and like, and I'm a little nervous about how far away I feel from that right now, because
sure.
This took many years out of my life, and I'm not, you know, any closer to a comedy writing job than I was before this. So I think it'll open up doors that I don't know about yet. And I'm trying to come to terms with that. My life looks a little bit different than I think I was thinking it would.
Yeah, I was literally having this conversation with a friend of mine like this morning, which is that the older you get, I think the less you see the life that you thought you were going to have. Like when you look around yourself, you're like, this is not at all what I pictured. But I think the key seems to be following where your gut is taking you and just trusting that the doors are going to open to get you to a place that you do want to be. And of course, from the outside, I can tell you that it looks like you're killing it. And then when you're in the middle of it, you're like, well, it doesn't feel that way all the time. But I think that clearly you followed your gut and you followed such an important story that I have no doubt that it will lead you to amazing doors that are going to open. But, you know, it's just so tough in the moment to feel that. I don't know if I've said it yet on this podcast, but what I've been telling myself all the time is just like, zoom out and just know that there's really good things. Like when I have one little failure, and then I can tell myself that means everything's a failure. And like, what's really been fucking up my mind recently is that I'm waiting to hear back from this big thing that I, you know, put a lot of work into, and it like came to a head yesterday. And because I, you know, really try to be as honest as I can on this podcast, I was such a fucking monster to Matt yesterday. I was just like, I couldn't explain why, but everything that was said, I felt like it was an attack to me. And I luckily was able to be like, I'm really sorry. I think I'm just kind of like the pressure or the anticipation. I've been waiting for something for like 3.5 weeks. And I I think that the zooming out of it all is that, you know what, I've got X, Y, and Z. I boo, 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 boo. I have this to look forward to. And it's like without when I'm just focusing on what I'm waiting on or what I don't have, then I drive myself fully insane.
I know. I'm so bad at that. Like, there's that part of me that does that, but then there's the other part, the Veruca Salt part of me that's sure. Like, I want the world.
I want the whole world.
So, yeah, I'm trying to like,
and
I'm trying to not
be
anxious.
I want it now.
Yes. Now. Yeah. I, you know, it just depends. I need to work on, I think, mindfulness, which I think really is helpful with that. I'm the worst at that, though. I don't meditate. I haven't been working out. I haven't been doing anything really healthy for myself. I really just let myself go college level, like eating garbage, Red Bull all day when we were finishing this thing. And now that I'm coming out of the fog of being done, I'm kind of like, what the fuck does
life
look like?
I feel like shit.
Yeah.
I mean,
really.
But you and I are very similar in that way of just like knowing, like, I probably would benefit from meditation. It would be good to drink some water. I mean, like, I'm so there, but I do think like if only the only direction is up, then we just follow that and we put down the Red Bull. I do want to ask a very famous podcast question, which is perhaps great. If the world was ending and you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I'm going to say, and I'm guessing this has been an answer before, but Joan Cusack.
Oh, yeah. You know, you'd be surprised that not as many people have said Joan Cusack as they should, quite frankly. But Joan Cusack. Ooh. Also, as a gay man, I will tell you, I find her very attractive. Just the way she, I wish I could do a good impersonation. Just like the way she talks. What is her? Yeah. Aren't her S's?
That side, kind of, it's kind of a side mouth.
It's a side. Oh, that's kind of it. It's a side mouth, and I'm Joan Cusack. Actually, I'm kind of impressed with myself.
You're doing very well. Yeah, the way she carries herself, the way she speaks, like, I love her. I mean, I just watched High Fidelity again, which is one of those movies that you're like, ugh, this character's horrible, the guy. But she's so great in it, and like, I just love watching her tell off her brother and stuff like that. And I also still have a crush, I think, on John Cusack, so I'm hoping that he comes along. You know, I get to save him at the same time.
Oh, please. I myself am partial to a John Q. I also, my first thought that comes to mind when you say Joan Cusack is it Adam's Family Matters? Or there's like one Adam's Family that she is like an evil bitch. And it's just, God, I love Joan Cusack. She deserves the world, truly.
Yeah, she's incredible. And I love her. She pops up in so many random things. And she's
I really want, like, I say this a lot, but I want, like, these types of female actresses to get the vehicle that they are due. And, like, of course, we're both.
I know, you're right. Yeah, we need her, like, White Lotus. Not, I haven't watched
Thank
it.
Thank you. Know. I have watched it. It is incredible. We need a Joan Cusack White Lotus. I mean, wow, she's so beautiful. I'm looking her up right now. And of course, one of the first things is Adam's Family. Oh, wow. She did get an Academy Award nomination for Working Girl. She's Saturday Night Live?
Wait, what?
For a year.
As a host?
She was a cast member on the comedy sketch show SNL from 85 to 86.
How did I not know this?
Wow, breaking news. Now, I'm a journalist, Babs. Move over, girly. Oh, my God. I'm going to do a joke.
We have to fact check this.
We're going
to
fact check because this is Wikipedia, but I'm going to start a Joan Cusack podcast. What's the name of the Joan Cusack podcast, Babs?
Oh, my God.
I got it. It's Cusack Cast.
Perfect.
Joan Cusack Cast.
Joan Cusack. I will say, this is just talking about fact checking. I was so deep in making this Britney thing, and I was also attempting to start stand up again.
Sure.
And it was so bad because I was like making jokes about journalism.
You're like, who, for the journalism girls out there, there's like,
I was like, so y'all ever been fact checking someone and then.
Every premise is about writing an article or coming together with a scoop.
Yeah, it's bad.
I mean, listen, I get it. You were fully sucked into it, but we are all the better for it. And also, we're all the better for Joan Cusack being who she is. God,
yes!
can you believe, like, Joan Cusack is also the sister of a very famous actor, John Cusack, and apparently what is Ann Cusack? What has she done?
I don't know.
Wait, I'm looking her up now. She's had minor roles in Multiplicity. She was in A League of Their Own. Ann Cusack. Grey's Anatomy. Okay, can you imagine being the third Cusack? That's the podcast. Third Cusack.
Yeah, who is this other Cusack?
And I hope, watch her be like the most incredible, like, and I'm just dragging on
Oh, wait, I recognize her. Yeah. Oh, I had no idea.
Oh my God.
She's definitely been in.
Oh things. Yeah, I love her. God, I am a dick. No, she's great. Anne, I take it back. Oh my God, I love you, Anne.
She was on Better Call Saul.
Sure. And you know what? I googled Anne Cusack, and then I go through the images, and there's a few images of her, and then it's just Joan Cusack. I'm like, God, poor Anne. Poor Anne.
We found a lost Cusack sister to us, so I feel like this has been very productive.
I really do as well, and I mean, gosh, I am such an effing fan. Oh, but before we say goodbye, I didn't prep you on this, but I want to know your answer. The question that's very important to me is, Babs Gray, what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God. Sister Act.
Come on, Babs Gray, giving us a Sister Act here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Do you remember, has it been like 20 years since you've seen it, or?
No, I watched it in the last year and it held up.
I love that for us. I really do. Are you talking about the Orig or the Sister Act 2?
I will say the Orig. The songs are still good, but did not hold up as well just overall movie-wise.
Wow, I do disagree, but I do respect you.
When's the last time you watched it?
I mean, like, Thursday? I'm kidding. I just, like, it's like, both Sister Act and Sister Act 2 are lifelong passions of mine, and Sister Act 2 is my number one. And I really think that it comes down to a memory of being so vulnerably closeted, and then I really feel like Dolores Van Cartier in Sister Act 2 was the first time I felt I want to say like I saw myself in someone, which is fully insane because it's like okay, a 40-year-old black woman playing a nun that's on the run from I think also like I know what it is. It's just like the movie itself was just like people trying to find what makes them unique and also understood. And so much about it was like, it made me feel so seen. And I, you know, Lauryn Hill's character in Sister Act 2. And I think that there's a reason why there's another movie that did that for me that I've talked about on this podcast many episodes ago, which is the movie Camp. I don't know if you've seen Camp, but
I've never seen it.
It's really, I mean, true. I actually haven't watched that one in a long time, and there's probably a big chance it does not hold up, but it was, you know, long story short, a movie about a bunch of fucking queer people that go to a theater camp, and it just talks about right. How high the stakes are at a theater camp, and which was filmed at an actual theater camp that is...
It's a documentary?
It's not a documentary, but it is based off a real thing. Actually, I wonder if there is a documentary. It's Zach Braff also went to this camp. And I did see the other day someone talking about on TikTok how Anna Kendrick, they know that she's a total monster and they don't care. It's basically just like they have no desire to meet her in real life, whereas there's other people that are known to be rude that like they would love to meet. I do not want to meet Anna Kendrick.
No. I don't care. She's fine.
Is she a good performer? Very much so.
Yeah, but I'm not, you know.
Wait, now that, because now I'm, I know we're going to leave in a minute, but now I want to know, when I say Lea Michele to you, what do you say back?
Glorp. I haven't seen Glee, so I don't know. I don't really have like much of an opinion on her. Oh, yes. I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, I hate it because I don't like what it does for... I don't like it making a nasty name for theater kids. You know, we're already up against enough.
Oh my God, Babs, that's a good point.
I don't like the... You know, it's like, God damn it, people already judging us.
Well, it's also like, in any sort of like subcategory, it's like when a gay person is being... Like when I see a gay guy that's being like... There was like something going around Twitter about a demon twink that was like eating someone's ass a lot at a concert. I'm like, come on, demon twink. Like, it's a good story, but we've got enough going on. We have Randy Rainbow. I'm kidding. Actually, I don't pile on Randy Rainbow as much as other people do. But like, then also like when I watch a documentary and I see like a Jewish man be like committing crimes and doing something bad, I'm like, come on, like there's enough anti-Semitism, we're dealing with enough, like please give us a better name,
go with something else. Lea Michele, I don't know, I don't have any opinion on. What about, okay, Catherine McPhee?
Babs, oh my God, that is such a good question. I mean, I Catherine McPhee, I find cancel her, let her go. I just feel like I think that she, the biggest mistake that she made is that, and if anybody listening doesn't know, basically what happened with Catherine McPhee is that she is married to David Foster, who apparently is also a villain, but she like had this big gay following and she was on Smash on NBC and like, you know, we love, of course, American Idol, but then it came out that she maybe voted for Trump, I think, or like donated money to Trump. I think what ended up happening is that she got outed for that. And then instead of like doing anything, she just went radio silent. And I don't think she's tweeted or posted anything since then. And that was like almost a year ago. And so...
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And then she just completely dropped off the face of the earth. And I find that to be not the move. And I think because of that, talk about like giving theater people a bad name. So Catherine McPhee has done some fucked up shit, but then do you know anything about the Laura Osnes stuff? Do you know who that is?
No.
Here's the elevator pitch. She was on Broadway in a bunch of shows. Like she was on the Grease reality show, You're the One That I Want. She got cast as Sandy on Broadway. Now she's incredibly talented. She's been known to maybe be conservative, but it came out that she wasn't getting vaccinated and she refused to get vaccinated, even though she was doing a show at a theater that required it. It came out that she left the show and then people really raked her through the coals. And the girl's not getting vaccinated.
Whew. You're going to give up your whole fucking career?
And I think she might be doing that. I mean, people are saying she might be doing like Fox News, the musical at some point, but whatever. It's
unless, yeah, we're going to do a whole unvaccinated only musical cast where everyone's just
only unvaccinated
giving
fans
each other COVID in the fucking show.
Yeah. Well, listen, Laura, get a fucking vaccine. Enough is enough. But speaking of, there's no way for me to go from Laura Osnes to Babs Gray, but I will say that. Speaking of being vaxxed, waxed, and on tracks for celebrity, I want to thank Babs Gray so much for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. You are a pod legend, and I cannot wait to see you in Los Angeles and for me to become a full-on monster.
Yes, we'll welcome you to the full. We'll go do mushrooms and then see what happens.
And that is a date. Well, I guess I'm on record as dragging Catherine McPhee over the coals. thanks so much for listening to this week's episode with the Babs Gray. Listen to her podcast, Toxic, and all the info that is linked in the show notes to follow along on Babs' social media. And if you want to follow me, I'm at Eric Wills on Insta, at Eric Wills TT on the old TikTok. And follow the Gay Ass Podcast Instagram, at Gay Ass Podcast. If you have not yet subscribed, make sure you do so you can get into our future episodes, including one with the iconic drag queen from RuPaul's Drag Race that will be announced soon on the Gay Ass Podcast Patreon. Have a great rest of your week. Stay gay, and I love you so much.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.